I'm going to talk to you through, several core concepts with Git. How many of you guys actually use some form of distributed version control today? Okay, a few. Okay, good. The rest of you guys in centralized, SVN, TFS, I can assume that. Okay. There's several scenarios where Git kind of really enables some additional agility within your teams. And I'll go through some basic stuff to kind of get you going and try to make it less scary. Because believe me, when I first started with Git about 2 years ago, it was pretty damn scary. So I'm going to tell you a few of the stories of going from not knowing anything about Git to actually using it on a daily basis. So who am I? My name is Mark Groves. I'm a principal program manager within developer division. I'm actually within the cloud services team. We work on TFS, we own CodePlex, a few other things. So I work on CodePlex on a day-to-day basis. I'm sure most of you are probably familiar with CodePlex. I know Patterns and Practices publishes a lot of our guidance on CodePlex. Before that, I worked on several parts of Visual Studio product, particularly on the Visual Studio Ultimate product. I worked on the UML tools along with Architectural Discovery, and most recently in the last Visual Studio 2012 release, I worked on Code Review and the My Work feature. So developer productivity has been something I've been working on probably the last 6 or 7 years that I've been at Microsoft. About, I guess, March last year, we added Git version control to CodePlex. This was kind of really my first opportunity to use Git on a daily basis. I had played around with it a few different times, but this is where all our code was. This is what we were doing on a daily basis. And now several teams within Microsoft are using Git regularly. We have the ASP.NET Web Stack team who has their project up on CodePlex, and that's their main repository along with the Entity Framework team. And then additionally, we have teams like the TypeScript team that just released a bunch of their compiler and several other parts of the TypeScript framework onto CodePlex using Git on a daily basis. So, a little history lesson. Git was created by Linus in around 2005 to work on the Linux kernel. You got to love open source because now everyone's kind of using this and it makes things a lot easier. It's kind of interesting history of where this stuff comes from, I always find. But now, it's not just for open source. There's lots of companies using Git kind of on a regular basis. We got, as I mentioned, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, and this is just obviously the major names you know of. There's lots of different companies both using closed source projects and, of course, their open source work using Git. So what really kind of is Git? You can think of it as a distributed version control system, as everyone kind of references it as. Or you can kind of think of it as a directory content management system, a tree-based history system, or, as the Git man page says, it's a stupid content tracker. However you think about it, I think Git is like really, really cool. I know most people don't really want to think about the guts of their version control system. They just want it to work. But as you get into it, I don't know, it's just kind of geeky fact that there's this acyclic graph and all these different SHAs going around. It's just really cool. I'm not going to go into all the guts details today, but I find it pretty cool. So what does distributed really mean? Everyone on your team has a complete history of the source. All branches, every single check-in that happened, every commit, complete history. It's kind of hard to think about. You're using centralized version control. You can't, usually you pull down your local working copy. You have one branch most likely. In this case, you have everything. What this enables is everything can be done offline. The only thing that you have to do connected to a server is when you're pushing code or pulling code from the central server. There's really no central authority in Git. You can have many servers. that you're pushing to or pulling from. And to be honest, each individual on your team that has a copy of the repository acts as a server. There's really no difference here. Now, of course, it would be pure anarchy if you just let that work kind of on its own. Usually, teams come up with conventions of where they want to push to, what the names of the servers are, things along that. And, you know, how many of you guys have been burned by my source control system is down for maintenance, and everyone kind of goes, up, source control's down, let's, you know, everyone's hanging out. Well, since everything is done locally, you really don't have an excuse anymore, sorry. You can check in, check out, do everything you need to do, and you can even share changes between users. You can literally move things between one server or one person's machine and another. So, believe me, I'm not going to go into the depths of comparing one, you know, centralized version control versus distributed version control, which one's better. That's not really the point of my talk. All I'm really trying to do is get you guys some awareness of how centralized version control somewhat differs from distributed version control. This picture is overly simplifying the story, but a central version control system, everything is kind of the central model, obviously, just by its name. Everything, all history, everything is stored up in the server. There's one kind of definitive copy of that code. It's really powerful. You make sure you have a server that's backed up, you know where it's at. On the distributed model, essentially every single person that's connected to that repository has a copy of it. What's nice about that is now you have n number of backups of that repository. If you want to delete the central repository and create a new one, it's no problem. You can just do that because everyone else has a copy of it, and you can just push another copy up. So branching and, you know, on the other end of it, merging is one of the major kind of benefits of something like Git. Everyone, you have to kind of first forget everything you know about branching and merging when it comes from your centralized version control systems. Historically, this is one of the conversations that I've normally had with teams when we start doing a new project. The first question when you're using a more centralized version control system is, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to set up a new branch? Are we going to work in branches? Are we going to work in topic branches? And everyone kind of freaks out because merging those things in gets really difficult. And people end up staying out on branches for longer than is healthy. Git, branches are just oxygen. You're just doing it all the time. You're not even thinking about it. You're branching every time you have an idea. A branch in Git is, I like to think of it as just kind of a sticky node on the graph. It doesn't really do anything besides give you a new pointer to what you're looking at in the actual file system. Everything on a Git repository happens in the same branch or same folder within your file system. This can be really scary the first time you get involved with it. I'll tell a personal story. When I first started playing around with Git, the first time I did a local branch, I did some work on it, and then I did the whole switching branches, and my IDE just started freaking out, removing files from my local repository, and I'm like, what just happened? I just ran this one command, and my last 4 hours of work is gone. In reality, everything's there. It's just magic behind Git. I'll get into a little bit of what that's about, but you really have to kind of trust that everything's okay. Everything's in the same file system. It's all stored for you nice and safe. And when you kind of switch branches, really all you're doing is moving that sticky note around, which is kind of freaky, but pretty cool. So the first thing to kind of get started getting on Git on your local machine is create a little folder. I'm going to create my cool project folder. I'm going to move into it. And to create a Git repository, all I really have to do is type git init. And that will initialize a folder. It'll be a hidden folder .git. that's where all the kind of magic happens behind Git. I'm not going to go into all the really kind of crazy details of how it keeps track of everything. But if you go into a .git folder and browse around, there's some pretty cool stuff in there. But essentially, that is a compressed copy of everything that's happening in all the different files and the versions of the things that's going on inside of Git. That's the one folder that you kind of don't want to mess with in your project. Nothing's really in there until I start committing some code. So if I create, kind of the required README file, Git has this concept of staging where you're adding files to basically make Git aware that you're tracking a file change. So I'm going to do a Git add of all the files in the folder. In this case, just the README. And then I'm going to run Git commit, and then I have my little message. My first commit's kind of required to have that first node there. And Git's going to give me back that it did that create, and it's going to give me my little SHA of where it's tracking that change. So let's see what this actually looks like visually. So I have my README file, and I do my first commit, and it's represented by A here. And by default, Git has this convention where it names the main branch master. So nothing special about master. It's just a name. You can have multiple branches, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But and the little star here represents which branch you're on at any given time. So I can make a couple commits into this local repository, represented by B and C. And as you can see, the master, kind of that sticky note, moves along with it. Now, say I want to go work on a bug fix. Normally you would just do this kind of in your main folder, your main branch, and then you deal with merging later. One of the things, because Git works so well with branching and merging, it's kind of a best practice to, when you go and start wanting to work on something, create a branch. They're pretty lightweight. So I'm going to create a branch right now, and using the checkout command, switch to it. So I make a few more changes, and so you'll see D and E is based off of C now, and we're kind of moving forward here. So now if I want to check out master, now what's going to happen? Remember when I told you I was really scared and all the changes removed? That's what would happen at this point. The changes I just made on D and E just got removed from my local file system. So if I had Visual Studio up, it would warn me that those files just got changed. Do you want to reload them? And that's fine. Basically, I'm working on merging those changes in here. So if I do a git merge on that branch, I'm going to pull up the changes essentially into master. And that's like the simplest flow that you're going to see in a git kind of scenario here. Since that branch is just my branch, I didn't share it with anyone else, no one else knows about it, I can delete it. Deleting branches is as simple as running this little branch-d command, and it's gone from my system. But of course, the changes I made are now a part of master. So let's run a little bit different scenario. Say I was doing some work on bug fix 456 down in this other branch that's based off of C, but I had to switch back to make some changes in master, say patching a production issue. Or since I can have as many branches as I want locally, it's kind of nice and lightweight that I can switch between versions of the code without impact to having a change or bug fix that's not really ready to go into production or stuff like that. So I can go out and work on my bug fix. But now, if I want this bug fix integrated into master, I kind of have two options. I can merge these changes together. So if I run the merge command, what's going to happen is essentially it's going to take the changes from G, combine them with the changes from E, and create this new version called H. And of course, this is just a normal merge command that you would expect in any other case when you're doing source integrations. Sometimes this is easy, sometimes it's more complex, kind of really depends. But you're creating essentially a new file from the combinations that you did before. So there's another option. I can delete that branch, of course. The other option, let's go back and rewind a little bit. I'm going to take you through kind of the rebase flow. When first time someone explained rebase to me, it kind of confused me. So hopefully I won't confuse you guys. But think about, this is where people talk about rebase or rewriting history. Git allows you to rewrite history. So what happened here is we are on branch 456. I basically created file F off of based off of C, and I started making changes. Well, that merge, you know, could have been a pain. So let's see if we can do this a little differently. By using the rebase command, what we're basically doing is saying that I want to rebase my changes from F and G. Instead of them being based off of C, let me replay those changes as if they started on E. So basically taking the contents and the changes between and replaying them on the latest version. So you are rewriting history, but since you haven't shared that history with anyone, it's really not a big deal because it's really just what you've been working on. So we've created these two kind of new versions of F and G that are based off of E now. But now the merge is simple because since F prime is based off of E, I can just merge this in, and basically it's a simple merge. You know, basically nothing, there's no problem there. So just a real quick review. It's really easy to create feature branches. I highly recommend that if you have the spark of idea, create a branch first and then start making changes. There are very detailed ways of creating a branch after the fact, but it's pretty easy to just create a branch. If you don't need it, you can delete it. And, you know, creating a branch is pretty lightweight, and rebase doesn't need to be scary. There's lots of really complex ways you can rebase, you can rewrite. I don't recommend it, but rebasing the server, but there's way complicated things you can do. But the base concept is essentially all you're doing is saying, let me replay these changes on a different version of the file. So software development's a team sport, though, right? Like, you don't get to just do this on your local file system and make this nice and simple. So one of the things you can do with Git, as I mentioned, is you can share versions of files across different people. Since everything has these unique identifiers that reference where they came from, you can actually do this without any central server. I don't really recommend this. It's kind of chaos. I mean, if you can try to think of sending emails and sending changes around. But it technically can be done. This is where we add kind of a remote server into this picture. And the reason, you know, one of the reasons that it's called a remote is because, you know, obviously it's remote to you. It's a separate server. But kind of another is implied in this is you can have more than one of these. So if I set up a remote server, now basically each of the repos connect to that, and then people are sharing code changes throughout that remote server. And we'll go into some more details of how this kind of looks in practice. There's nothing really special about a remote. The only thing that tends to be is that it doesn't have a working directory, meaning you couldn't. If you go into the file system on that server, you're not going to see all the files exploded out. They're compressed into what's called a bare repository. But for all other purposes, it's just another peer in the peer-to-peer network in this decentralized version control system. So setting up a remote, there's kind of two ways to set up a remote. It really depends on if you have an existing repository locally or if you're starting from fresh. So if you have a local repository already, what you're going to want to do is basically go into that directory and do a git remote add, and then you're going to name the remote. Kind of by convention, again, the main remote that you set up is historically called origin, the origin server. It's usually where you get things from regularly. You can name this whatever you want. I'll talk through some examples later where you can set up multiple remotes and name them based on where you're basically pushing them to. So for example, pushing things to Azure. You can push to GitHub and Coplex at the same time, for example. Nothing wrong with that. So if I find out what remotes I have, basically you're gonna see these two URLs, one for fetching the code and one for pushing the code. Now, if you don't actually have a copy of the repository set up already on your local machine, you're gonna wanna clone that repository. So using the clone command will bring down that repository into your local file system, set up the folder and everything. It'll create that .git folder for you. If you go in there, it's the same thing. You're going to see the same kind of remote setup where it's going to show you where you're essentially pointing to. You can name them, as I mentioned, you can name them whatever you want, and origin's kind of only a convention. Let's kind of see what this looks like in practice. So back to our scenario where we have our bug fix, we made a bunch of changes. This is just with my master folder, my master branch is set up, doesn't know about origin. As soon as I basically set up my origin server, now I have this other concept where essentially A is not only pointing to master, but there's also this other tracking branch that's out there called origin/master. So think of this as my remote version of that code base. So now, of course, the origin server doesn't know anything about my bug fix branch. You haven't shared that with anyone. It's just local to your own machine. Also, on the other hand, in this case, F and G are on the origin. They're up on the remote server, say it's Coplex, GitHub, what have you. And I don't know about it yet. I actually haven't pulled those changes down yet. They're up there, but I actually haven't done anything with it, so I'm just working on my bug fix and not really worried about what's upstream. Now, if I wanted to go get those changes, if I switch over to the master branch, I can do a pull and pull those changes down. So let's talk a little bit about what a pull is. Pull essentially is two Git commands in one. The first is fetch. You're basically saying to the remote, get me the changes that I don't have on this branch. And then it does a merge. So you can do this separately. You can do a fetch, which will bring the copies down into a branch called origin/master, so it's a completely separate copy. And then you can then merge things in kind of whenever you want. This is a good practice if you're working, if you expect that you're behind on changes that have happened on the origin and you're working on that branch. You can bring things locally, do local diffs, compare things, and then merge things in when you think you're ready. But if you think you're kind of not on that branch and you're in a good situation, you can just do the pull command. It'll get you up to date pretty quickly. So I've done that, and basically now I'm in sync. My master branch anyways is in sync with my origin. If I go back to my bug fix, I'm going to get my changes. I want my changes back into master. So we're going to rebase again. I want to base my changes instead of off of A, I'm going to take my changes and base them off of G like we did earlier. Check out master. Merge it back in. So now my master branch that I'm on is ahead of the changes that are up on the origin. So if I want anyone else to see those, I need to push those up to my colleagues. So let's talk a little bit about push. Basically, pushes take the changes you have and forward that pointer on the origin server. One of the important aspects here is to understand is Git will reject any push where you are behind what's changes up there. Versus most centralized version controls, if you try to do a check-in to TFS, for example, and you're behind, it'll do a merge on the server, and you have to deal with that. I've personally always had a little bit of a challenge with that mentally. It's like I'm now checking in files on another machine that I've never really run. I've never played with. In most cases, they're trivial changes, not a big deal. But it's kind of always a best practice to pull all those changes locally first, make sure that what you did and what was out on the server are going to work well together, and then push up the changes. Git, by kind of definition, will not let you push changes in this situation. It will require you to pull, then push those changes up. So it's kind of always a best practice. You kind of get into a mental state of before you push, you pull. And a lot of the tooling now, as it's getting better, is starting to put in the command called sync, which essentially behind the scenes is doing a pull and a push for you. So now we basically have shared our changes up and we're in the same place that we were before. And I can delete my bugfix branch. No one really needed to know about that. That was just something for me, making it nice and easy for me to work. So adding a remote, adding several remotes is pretty simple, a few commands. And then pulling from remotes often helps basically on my team, what we do is pretty much every morning when you check in, when you come in, first thing you're doing is pulling any changes that happened since yesterday. Kind of makes it easy to run all the local tools to compare what's going on. So I talked a little bit about local branches, or what I will call short-lived branches, things that are going on for bug fixes or stories. These make them really, really simple to stay off a master, keep your changes nice and clean from everyone else's. This also enables you to work on many things at once. You can keep switching between branches and keep those changes keep them apart. I kind of go through this process where it's like create the branch, commit the changes, merge those changes, and then delete the branch. It's kind of a good way to think about short-lived branches. Now, long-lived branches, these are the branches that you're going to share up on the remote server. These are the ones that everyone on your team is kind of working with. These are the types of things where you're working on multi-version work. For example, if you just did a release and then you wanted to go and start working on the next release, you might create a branch that you share out named V2 or something like that. They follow the exact same rules. There's nothing special about master. You don't really even need a master branch. You can name these whatever you want. And you should really just if you have a develop branch or a V2 branch or a maintenance branch, you should still always kind of work day-to-day and story branches underneath those branches. It makes things a lot nice and clean. It's kind of a best practice. You want to integrate with these branches kind of regularly. And those branches are pushed to remotes and shared with everyone. So let's see what this looks like. We're getting a little more complicated and we're building up kind of the relationship here. So I'm working on my development branch just like we were doing before. We have a bunch of changes that started off on E. But I created this development branch. This is something I'm going to share across my whole team. So we have an origin/develop in this case. So if I switch to that, now team members of mine, they could have been making additional changes, F and G. So just like I did on master earlier, I want to get those changes. So if I do a pull, the develop branch in this case. So I'm going to do git pull, origin's my remote. I want to pull that develop branch down. And that's going to bring the changes F and G locally. So now I'm going to work on some new idea I have, right? So I can create my new topic branch, my little branch that's going to be local. And until I start making changes, does anything really change? Now my idea branch is actually moved ahead of the develop branch. I commit those changes in. Now, of course, software development doesn't stop because I'm working off of my own local little idea branch. Things are happening up on Origin Master, maybe some production bug fixes, things along those lines. It's happening in I. And this is what I do on a kind of daily basis. We come in and pull down those changes. So now I can run my compare tools and compare where I'm at in my idea branch against what's happening in production. Keeps me kind of up to date. Sure. No, that's a great question.
He's telling me, like, don't use Git
So the important part about what this looks like on the, so for maybe if you didn't hear, what does this look like on the file system? Basically, all you ever see on the file system, if you're not digging around in the .git folder, is what is on the, is the files that are in the branch that I have a little star on, so develop. So if I'm making changes, just think of it, that's the same files that are there in your folder system. You're not, there's one folder, your root folder on your file system, and as I'm making changes, that's there. Now if I switch branches, Git is going to basically swap out those files. So your file system essentially is going to get updated with those changes. Does that make sense?
It's
going
to push all my changes locally, whatever I'm
making. Yeah, so it's essentially, think of it as, like, there's this .git folder that is basically this thing that will grab all those changes, compress them, and take them away from you. So your local file system, you can keep switching branches and get different versions of the code all in the same folder. I know it's like you have to just do it and kind of play around and see things move away from you. And like switching branches, it just works. I mean, I just recommend play around with it and see how things change. Maybe if there's time, I can demonstrate some simple examples. But essentially, your file system, your file system doesn't know any better. It's just like you were manually deleting those changes or moving them back and forth. Things just work. Git on your local file system is managing all of those relationships and those changes and just storing them and bringing them back. So I'm going to move my change forward now. So one of the things you'll hear kind of tossed around, whenever you didn't have to do a merge where there's a conflict or anything, basically your, in this case, H is based off of G, it'll just call it a fast forward merge. They just merge in, no problem. There's no problem. They're based off of the same item. I can delete my idea branch again. So now I'm going to push my development branch back up. This is the same things I was doing earlier, but now I'm working on, instead of off of master, I'm working off of my development branch. So one of the things I showed earlier was kind of the normal merge scenario and then also rebase. This is kind of an important thing if you start to work in a bigger team, coming up with how you want to deal with this. So what I mean by this is I've worked with development teams that they don't really care. You can do merges into other branches, and the way the tree looks, it's fine by them. I work with several teams that they want their tree structure to look nice and clean. And they have lots of really strict rules around never checking in unless you've rebased your changes off of the latest copy. It's just kind of a cultural thing. So this is one of those decisions that you make. Since Git itself doesn't have any rules around this, this is one of those conventions that you'll come up with. So let me walk you kind of through how these things look slightly differently. So in this case, I want to merge my development branch into master. Say, for example, I'm ready to start working on shipping this next version out, and I want to get that to my main production branch. So if I do a merge, I'm going to create this new copy called J, based on combining I and H together, just as what we've seen before. I did this all locally, though, remember? So I pulled everything down, or everything's already there. I did my merge. Now I have a master version that is different than what's up on origin. So then I push that up to origin, and basically we're ready. All the things I was doing in development is now up in my master branch. So now if I do the rebase flow, it's the exact same situation, except for since I want to change what I based my changes in develop off of. Since there could have been fixes, like I represents a bug fix in production, say. I want to make sure that I base my changes in development off of that version. So the origin has that. If I rebase that develop branch off of master, now I've created this new I. And once I push that up, my tree is nice and flat. So if you see these things together, it's just kind of there's kind of a stylistic thing. Do you like to see your code changes nice and flat, or do you want to see these bumps in your flow? This can get really complicated. This is one of the reasons I don't recommend people to share their idea branches or their little bug fix branches, because as you can imagine, if you have 8 to 10 developers all creating local branches and then pushing those to the server, this tree can get rather large. So just kind of as a review, it's great for multi-version work. You have a great way of kind of creating a branch, lightweight, merging things in is pretty easy. It still follows the same rules around story branches and such. And you really want to define your conventions. What is the branch? What is the point of it? So, for example, in Coplex, we have several branches. One represents our production environment. And then we also have branches based on different development efforts we're doing. For example, just recently, we did a markdown. We added markdown to Coplex. So we had a branch that was long-lived. It took about 2 or 3 weeks of development. So in that branch, that's where all the developers were integrating into that branch, separate from the production branch. This allowed the test team to work in the master main production branch. And as bug fixes were coming in there, they didn't have to worry about changes coming in from Markdown. When they were ready to start looking at the Markdown changes, there was two options. So you could have switched to the Markdown branch and start testing that. But what we did was we merged in the Markdown branch into master and started testing that out. And it kind of kept things separation of concerns. It was nice. So it just kind of depends on your environment. We deploy every week in Coplex, so we have this kind of lean flow where we're kind of always pushing things out. So we manage our branches based on that flow. So I'll give you this is going to be a kind of a very simple example of how to deploy with Git. I like to think of one of the things that I like to think about Git is it's kind of like developer FTP. You know, we do these things where you are pushing changes to a remote server. Well, that remote server doesn't just need to be a server that you're sharing code with each other around. It could be a production environment. It could be a test environment. It could be a build server. It's just another Git repository that you're pushing changes to. Conceptually, it's really kind of a nice way of knowing which or how to push files around. Of course, FTP works just fine, but FTP doesn't have any concept of versions. So you can create multiple branches. You can say, for example, you can have a remote push to your test environment, your staging, and production environments completely separate. One of the things inside of Git is this concept of a post-commit hook or post-receive hook. Basically, every time that you do a commit into a Git repository, you have an opportunity to do something. In Coplex, we have what we call a webhook, a service hook, that hooks up Azure to do a deployment. So, for example, I have my blog up on Azure websites. I have all the content of my blog on a Coplex repository. Every time I push to the master branch on my Coplex repository, it tells Azure, hey, there's a change. Basically push those changes over to Azure and does a deployment for me. I don't ever have to get on the Azure machines. I don't have to do anything. I just do a commit, and my changes are up out of my server instantly. Now, obviously a trivial example, just my blog. But there's several cloud providers that enable this. I know I'm missing a long list of things here. But I know AppHarbor, Heroku, Nojitsu, and of course Azure supports pushing things with Git. Kind of walk through a simple Azure deployment. You guys all seen Azure websites? It's pretty cool. You know, I love playing around with it. So I can create a new site in just a few moments here. And so I create my new cool project website. Let's set that up. And so now we have a couple options on the website, on the Azure side. Gives me a few options. I can set up TFS and publish out of my build controllers onto Azure websites. I can also just set up Git publishing. So if I set up Git publishing, gives me a few options. Like I mentioned, I can hook up my CodePlex project to fire off on these event hooks. I can also hook up Bitbucket and GitHub, same type of scenario. Or, as you'll see here, it's kind of small to see, but I get a Git URL. So this URL is essentially another remote that I can configure. Gives me some directions, but if I want to go set this up, basically, it's just another remote. So I do git remote add. I'm going to name it Azure. Like I said, you can name these things whatever you want. And I give them the URL that they want for this website. If I switch there, you'll see now I have two remote servers. I have my origin server where I'm going to do all my development, and then my Azure server, which represents my production environment in this case. So I can push my branch to Azure. So I'm just going to say git push Azure, just like I did with my origin when I was sharing changes. All I'm really doing is sharing my changes to my server. So it's going to basically zip up those changes and send them up to the server. And what's happening on the other end, if you look at the log on Azure websites, it's taken my commit and deployed it to the website. So what I like about this is from a developer flow perspective, it's a really simple workflow. I'm already doing this when I'm pushing out to share code with my peers, but it just gives me a way of sharing the same way out to servers. I can get a little more complex with this with adding hooks and events, and you can get into like way more advanced scenarios here. But all the core concepts are there. You're essentially just creating a remote. Depends on if that remote is pushing to a build server, or and then you can push on success. So what if your organization uses TFS? Did the last, 40 minutes just completely wasted your time? So we actually have a tool that we've recently released called GitTF. It allows all of that local workflow that I just got done talking about, like all the local branches, all of that capability, to happen locally on the developer's machine, but push to TFS as if it was a remote server, as a Git remote. It's a multi-platform tool. And we've open sourced it out on CodePlex. So you can run this on Mac, you can run it on Linux, you can run it on Windows, of course. It's just essentially, it's a Java-based, and it adds some capabilities. So we'll go through a developer workflow using TFS, GitTF. So when you set up, the first thing you need to do is basically, it's a little different terminology, but I'm going to git tf, so basically add the extension here. I'm going to clone, and this represents my server, so my TFS server. And then I'm going to say, give me a directory path, a branch name, and a directory path that I want to clone down. There's a few extra options here that I'm not going to go into. You have a decision at this point. Do you want to do a deep clone that Git kind of really likes, which is pulling from TFS all of the history into the local Git repository, just like you would do normally with Git. Or you can do a shallow clone. Really kind of depends on how big your TFS code base is that's in TFS. For example, if I was to try to do a Git deep clone of the DevDiv source code, it does too much memory. I can't actually do that. So a lot of developers on the team, what they do is they do a shallow clone, and it'll pull in just the latest changes off of that branch in TFS. So essentially now you have a Git repo. To Git, it doesn't really know. It just thinks it's a Git repo that's local. So I can do my normal Git workflow, creating local branches, all of that, and just like I was doing before. So, but now if I want to share them with everyone, I can basically do git tf pull, but rebase off of the main changes that happened off the server. And then if I want to share those changes up to the server, I just do git tf check-in instead of git push like you normally would. So that works really good if you have like one developer working that wants to use Git locally but is using TFS, the rest of the team is using TFS. If you're in a situation where you have multiple developers all working in Git and they have to share to a TFS server, there's another pattern that works pretty well. For me, this scenario, we've talked to a lot of customers that, for example, they have TFS across their organization, but they have that iOS team that's using macOS, and they want to work on Git. Their changes don't actually need to get integrated on a regular basis, but they do want to share work items and everything else through their system. So they want to be part of the TFS system, but they need to be able to work on their Git workflow just like we showed earlier. So one way of doing this is basically have one committer to the main TFS repository. So you have Tom's repo here that does the deep clone out of TFS and then pushes that to another remote that the team can work around. This is exactly what we were talking about before. Basically, Matt and Tracy, they're all working between each other in this shared repository, and then on a periodic basis, they're pushing changes, Tom's pushing changes up to TFS. And we're keeping track of who actually made the commits, like Matt's commits and stuff like that. So you're not actually losing anything from what Tom, since Tom's the committer, but it kind of keeps a little bit more order in this type of pattern. So that's kind of a summary of Git TF. You can work locally, treat TFS as kind of a remote server. It works on all platforms. And it's open source, so you can go check it out. But it is fully supported by us. So one of the things I highly recommend, I'm not going to go into a bunch of all the different tool choices. There's lots of different options here. But if you're at all interested in kind of starting to play around with Git, the first thing I would suggest is go out to the Git SCM website. It's like chock full of great resources. It has all the different IDEs or all the toolkits you need, lots of different resources. There's a whole Git book that's free that is written by one of the GitHub employees that's really detailed and will take you through kind of the next like four or five levels of Git. That's the book. There's several tools here. If you're a PowerShell user, I highly, highly recommend getting PoshGit. It kind of takes all the completing of commands and just gives you a nice tracking of where your branch is and gives you a nice kind of PowerShell feel to what really is a Linux command line when you get down with it at the end of the day. Another recommendation, if you're using a Git repository that doesn't support SSH. For example, Coplex, we don't support SSH. We're using just SSL and HTTP. A lot of people run into having to type in their username and password every time they're pushing to the server. I recommend getting the Windows Git Credential Store plugin. What this does is Windows has this great capability of caching your credentials, and Git has a plugin for that. So it'll allow you to type in your username and password once. It'll store it securely on your Windows machine. And now every time you go and push your changes up, it'll go get the credentials out of that location instead of asking you for them over and over again. And kind of the last thing from a tooling perspective, make you guys aware of, GitHub has built a really nice Windows client that doesn't only work with GitHub. So even if you push to Coplex or your own Git repository, GitHub for Windows will allow you to push and sync your changes. It takes a lot of kind of the common tasks, makes it nice and easy. I do highly recommend that you guys learn the command line if you're going to learn Git. Any of the tools that abstract a bunch of these concepts, the one challenge comes into is when if you run into a problem and you've never seen the command line, you've jumped into the deep end pretty fast there. So I always recommend use the command line, learn the main Git commands so you're at least familiar with it before you jump into too many of the the GUI experiences. So that's all I have for today. I'm definitely have a few minutes for questions. Over here.
What about conflict resolution? You know, merge conflict resolution. That's where these things shine and fail.
Yes, absolutely. So the question or statement was, what about merge conflict resolution? You know, one of the things that's kind of really nice about it, one, you're doing everything locally, right? So you're merging in your changes between other branches locally, so it's not kind of this last ditch, really kind of stressful situation. Using rebase actually helps a lot. There's a bunch of commands that I didn't go into, for example, interactive rebase, where it'll basically show you how it's going to apply those changes onto that on the tip. But since locally, you have every single version. Git locally knows what's going on. Git does a really good job with merge.
What do they provide to help?
Tooling-wise? Well, so the Git command line works really well as far as merging, but then you can plug in any merge, three-way merge tool that you want. It'll feed into that from a visual perspective. If you don't do anything, it basically, if it does, if it tries to merge two files together and says that it needs help, it basically creates a new file for you that you go in and you're editing. I actually am still doing that. I don't have merge conflicts very often, so I haven't even plugged in a more visual merge tool. So, anything else? Any other questions? Okay. Oh, right here.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reason we want to use Git?
So the question was, say you're using TFS now, is there a reason you want to use Git? That's kind of really up to obviously your team and what you're doing and all that kind of stuff. I work on the TFS team, so I think it's good that you're using TFS. But there's a few benefits to Git or distributed version control over centralized version control. One is this ability, this local ability, obviously, being able to create lightweight branches. There's an agility to that that you don't necessarily always get in centralized version control systems. For example, one of the recent conversations I had with a team that's using TFS is they had to decide up front when they were starting this project, okay, what is our branching structure? And they spent, you know, a couple days kind of like, okay, here's where we think we're going to be in integration. There's a lot more planning up front versus most of the teams I've worked with that are using Git on a daily basis. They set up a few conventions based on experience, and then they start going. So there's a little bit of an agility there. The one thing that is definitely true is a lot of, if your whole team is new to Git, that is, you guys are all jumping into the deep end. So I highly recommend having at least one kind of expert to take people through it. You know, it's just good being aware of different ways of doing things too. Right here.
With so many high-profile projects in Microsoft now using Git mm-hmm. for their version control, it just seems inevitable that TFS would support it natively at some point. Is that in the works?
So the question is, does TFS have plans to enable Git natively? I'm not prepared to talk about any product plans at this. This is just more of awareness. Was there a hand back there? Okay. Great. Thanks, everyone. I guess.
Nope.
Go, yeah.